Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Stuart Acuff with Utility Workers Union of America, asking you to tune in every time you can to Bob Carson's Carson's Corner, one of the best pro-labor shows in America. We love it at Utility Workers. We love it across the AFL-CIO, and we're grateful to Bob for coming on and holding up our issues and holding up our principles and values.
My name is Angelo Carasone, better known as Stop Back on Twitter, and primarily I spend my time trying to debunk right-wing lies that permeate our media, and there's, you know, one of the places that we do it is on Bob Carson's show.
This is Lamar Waldron, the author of Ultimate Sacrifice and Legacy of Secrecy, those two books, the latter of which will become a movie produced and starring Leonardo DiCaprio in 2013. And you are listening to Carson's Corner with Bob Carson on Underground Progressive Radio.
This is Les Leopold, the author of How to Make $1 Million an Hour. And I just want to tell you that you'll get a rich and rewarding experience by listening to Carson's Corner.
This is Greg Palast, reporter for BBC Television and Democracy Now, and author of the new book, Vulture's Picnic, In Pursuit of Petroleum Pigs, Power Pirates, and High Finance Carnivores. And you're listening to Carson's Corner on 5:30 a.m. Underground Progressive Radio, radio for the 99%. Help us occupy the airwaves and support Carson's Corner and support 5:30 Underground Progressive Radio.
Hi, this is Frank Schaefer, author of Sex, Mom, and God. You're listening to Carson's Corner, a show I enjoy. I hope you enjoy it, too. I encourage you to listen.
Prepare for the winter storm season. Insulate your home and have a safe emergency heat source for at least one room. This advice is from your friends at Underground Progressive Radio.
Carson's Corner, a late night edition here on the Eastern Coast as we are starting at 10:30 p.m. Eastern Time. My name is Bob Carson, and if you want to be a part of the program, please feel free. Call me at 347-326-9749. That is 347-326-9749. We also have the chat room open for you. I know there are a lot of people out there that listen to Blog Talk Radio on the West Coast, so we encourage you to chime in the chat room or give me a call during the course of this hour. Either one is fine as we discuss the relevant happenings of the news, or in the news, actually, from a progressive point of view, because we understand that it's very difficult to get a true progressive point of view. There's no question about that. The corporate media is comprised of hosts that are far removed from you and I, and they're mainly advocating for one team, one political team that is doing the bidding of the powerful in this country. And so you're not going to get a real good diverse opinion range in the corporate media, and that's why it's so important to tune in to shows like this that are gaining listeners each week. I got to tell you, we really are increasing our audience size, and I'm so proud of that. We probably increased our weekly audience size by 300-400% since we're on Podomatic. Ever since we made the switch to Blog Talk Radio, it's been fantastic, and that's why I do the show. I wouldn't be doing the show if there was nobody out there listening, although I probably would, because one person listening to what I have to say is very, very important. It really is. I want to talk about, by the way, you could friend me on Facebook at facebook.com/BobCarsonMMA. And you could also follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/BobCarsonMMA. I want to talk about the 113th Congress. There was an article on the Huffington Post, and I don't really pay attention too much to the Huffington Post because I think after it was bought out by AOL, they've become more of a corporate-centered, centered website now that does not give people the true, news out there, or the true angles, or whatever. The website has gone downhill, unfortunately. You've got the news feeds from Yahoo and others that just make their way onto the Huffington Post, and it's not a site that I regularly visit. I used to, but I don't anymore. But they linked this article up about how the 113th Congress is on track to be the least productive virtually of any Congress in history. Certainly they've passed the fewest number of bills in history. I mean, they have a lot of things to deal with. I mean, I'm a student, and I have over $60,000 in student loans. By the way, I just wrapped up my master's last week. I actually completed my master's, and I'm probably going to go back for some sort of doctoral degree. But right now, I'm over $60,000 in debt, and the interest rate is 6.8%. And Congress has let this expire. So now individuals like myself who are set to start repaying the loans have a 6.8% interest rate that we have to contend with. You've got immigration reform that the Congress is not looking to act upon. You've got post office, you've got the debt ceiling, and it's Americans are just suffering. You have a national unemployment rate at 7.6%, which does not reflect the true unemployment rate, which is much higher because of the way they calculate the unemployment rate. And still, I mean, in this state, New Jersey, you've got over an 8% unemployment rate. New Jersey has had higher than national average unemployment since 2011. And it's really the economy is not getting better. I know the statistics-wise it is. I mean, more home purchases, more jobs being created each month. But the statistics don't mean anything because, as Ralph Nader told us, the yardsticks in which to measure progress are given to us by people that control the system. So he who controls the yardsticks controls the game. And if you measure our economy by other things like well-being, like health, poverty, so on and so forth, you see a different picture being painted. And so this Congress now is just absolutely doing nothing. Even they're doing less work than the previous Congress. And my question to you is what is it going to take to wake people up in this country? Why aren't we out in the streets right now? Other countries, they're out in the streets, okay? You've got countries like Greece, Spain, Brazil. I'm not talking about any of the Arab Spring countries, although they're out in the streets as well. They understand it. They get it. How many protests, massive protests, have we seen in France over issues that we take for granted here in America? We've seen a pillaging of the middle class, the poor, and working poor, and still we're just marching along. We're accepting the new status quo, which is corporate profits through the roof, free trade that benefits nobody but the transnational corporations, and a system of labor control as Joe Burns, author of the book Reviving the Strike, points out, that we have a system that is designed to control labor. The system is not a fair mediator between capital and labor, and it suppresses labor. And as a result, the working conditions of working class men and women have deteriorated, particularly over the last 30-plus years with the beginning of Reaganomics. And, you know, so we have this. We have a fascist party in the Republican Party where, going back to 2009, if you look at what the Republicans were doing, you know, after Obama was inaugurated, they weren't planning on how to, you know, make the country better. They weren't planning on how to get the country on the right track in terms of the economy, or at least improve the economy. They were discussing how they were going to make President Obama fail and how they were going to make him a one-term president. In fact, I think it was Mitch McConnell, the Senate leader, Senate minority leader, who said our number one priority is to make President Obama fail. And then you couple that with President Obama's leadership, which or lack thereof on virtually every issue, ends up negotiating against himself, and on every piece of legislation, major legislation that President Obama has passed, we've seen, you know, basically a right-wing piece of legislation that hurts this country, whether it's the stimulus plan, which is loaded up with tax cuts to get Republicans on board, and virtually none of them voted for the stimulus plan in 2009, whether it was the Affordable Care Act, which was modeled after what was created out of the Heritage Foundation, and Bob Dole ran on the same exact plan virtually. Mitt Romney signed it into law in Massachusetts, whether it's, you know, George Bush negotiated free trade agreements written and signed, sealed, and delivered by the Chamber of Commerce, whether it's the extension of the Bush tax cuts going back to 2010. Before that, he freezed the pay of federal workers, you know, cutting budgets to the point now where spending is at the lowest level that it's been in decades now. I mean, you know, we have, unfortunately, a majority of Americans thinking somehow that spending is a problem. Spending is just out of control, when in actuality, spending is at its lowest level probably since 2007. And you look at, you know, discretionary spending, it hasn't moved in decades. And, you know, in spite of all this, the just horrible performance of our Congress, nobody seems to care in this country. We continue to watch our reality shows. We continue to just go about our daily lives when our daily lives are being just siphoned. We're just being attacked in so many different ways, and it's just absolutely disgusting. I mean, I ask, when is enough enough? And, you know, if you look to the 2016 election, which I really at this point, it doesn't matter what political party is in power. You know, we all understand, I think, that money has the power in our society, and corporations and the very wealthy control the entire economy by various ways, and we could talk about this for hours. You're probably going to have Governor Christie and you're probably going to have Hillary Clinton running against each other. And, you know, it goes back to what it was in 2008 and 2012, where it's which political party is least oppressive to you. We understand that each political party is going to serve the interests of the banks and the multinational corporations, but what are they going to do for you somewhere, some way? You know, which law are they going to pass, or what are they not going to do? Like, oh, you know, they're not going to privatize Social Security. They're not going to voucherize Medicare. Okay, and therefore we should vote for this candidate. And it's going to be a close race. It really is. And, you know, Governor Christie may actually end up winning, because now the Supreme Court, a couple weeks ago, as you know, threw out Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act, and now, you know, states can basically do anything they want when it comes to voter rights. You know, we've seen states like North Carolina and Texas and other right-wing controlled states right after this decision start attacking workers' rights. And so this is what this is all about, because the political will in this country, you know, that Supreme Court justices like Antonin Scalia and the other right-wing fascists subscribe to, do not want voting to take place among all citizens. As Paul Weyrich said, the founder of ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, and Paul Weyrich, I believe, was a member of the Reagan administration, you know, says, as the voting populace goes down, our leverage in elections goes up. You know, there's nothing worse than these fat cats at Wall Street and the fascists within, you know, these right-wing intellectual think tanks hate more than the fact that, you know, you have minorities out there, Hispanics, African Americans, that are basically eliminating their white majority. And it's been happening steadily since 1980. And so the political will exists in this country to maintain economic supremacy by suppressing the vote. Okay? And that's what's happened now. Now the fascists have a green light to suppress the vote in any way they can. And people argue, oh, well, you know, minority voter turnout increased last election, and, you know, more Hispanics voted. The only reason why they voted is because there was a strong get-out-the-vote effort in spite of a bad economy. But that doesn't erase the law. That doesn't make these laws okay. And, you know, there's so many different tactics to disenfranchise voters out there. And so it's just, you see this, we're moving backwards. We really are. We have a Congress that is doing nothing, right? We have a Republican Party that is essentially a fascist party. We have the Democratic Party, which mirrors the Republican Party of the 50s. Okay, they're no friends of the working folk. They may be a little bit more sympathetic to our plight, but by and large, they're in the pockets of big business as well. And this is continuing. It's just getting worse and worse and worse. And I at what point do we have a revolution in this country? I'm talking about a political revolution. You would have thought that after the stock market collapse in 2008, where we were losing 800,000 jobs a month, we had negative GDP growth, and millions of people lost their retirements, and Wall Street got off scot-free. They got interest-free loans from the government. No Wall Street executives went to jail, and now they're bigger and badder than ever. You would have thought that would have spurred a movement in this country to take Congress back and have Congress work on behalf of the American people. But no, we saw the opposite happen. We saw the Tea Party, which is, I would argue, a white backlash against changing demographics of America, a rebranding of the Republican Party. We saw them get created and infiltrate the Republican Party to the point now where they have all the power. They control one major political party. And when you control one major political party, you essentially bring the other party closer to your point of view. That's why I say the very wealthy and the corporations and the fascists like the Kochs and others, they control virtually everything in our country, even when they don't win elections. And that's what's important. Elections really don't mean anything anymore. I mean, look at the Dodd-Frank bill. This is a perfect example of how laws and elections mean nothing. where in 2010 you had the signing and passage of, or the passage and signing of the Dodd-Frank bill, which, you know, I haven't read the legislation recently, but it created the Consumer Financial Protection Board, I believe it's called. It established the Volcker Rule, which mandated that derivatives be traded on an open market. It did some other stuff too, but these were some of the main provisions in the bill. And of course, the financial industry, which had just wrecked the economy, fought vigorously against this. Well, they couldn't defeat it when it was in Congress, even though they sent their lobbyists, they swarmed Congress with their lobbyists. They couldn't defeat it. And then, it goes to implementation now. And now Gary Gensler is having difficulty writing the rules out of the futures, what is the office that he runs, the futures trading office. I don't remember the office, but Gary Gensler, former Goldman Sachs executive, is trying to write the rules to regulate these corporations. And they hired Eugene Scalia, the son of Antonin Scalia, to fight implementation, and they're doing it. And, you know, and now they're basically going to gut Wall Street reform. So, you know, even when we elect officials that pass laws that regulate business interests that have hurt this country, it means absolutely nothing, because the wealthy control just about everything. And that's what I'm seeing happening right now, where Congress is doing nothing. The Republican Party is essentially a fascist party. And still, in spite of the fact that they're doing nothing, in spite of the fact that they're kicking the American worker down the road, they're proud to bash unions, they're proud to privatize these programs, they're proud to, you know, siphon the Treasury to give corporate welfare. And, you know, considering all these things, you still have half of this country that would vote for the Republican Party. And that is just absolutely amazing. But it shows you that this country has really gone down the drain. This country is turning into the richest third world nation on the planet. And, you know, we have to wake up. We really do, because I've said this before and I'll say it again. You're going to have a time in America, probably in about 6 or 7 years, where half of all jobs are going to be minimum wage jobs. Okay? That means half of all American workers are going to be working for minimum wage. And you look at what's happening now. You look at, again, the political will that I discussed earlier, that wants to limit minority voting, wants to give more control to the corporations, wants to basically completely eliminate whatever rights workers have left, wants to turn this country into a complete corporate-owned state. You're going to have a repeal of the minimum wage law in America. You mark my words, that's where we're going right now. You already have sitting United States senators that would repeal the minimum wage. And I guarantee you, these bumpkins that watch Fox News, right, that the 98% of Fox News' primetime audience is white, these white, you know, anti-government, low-information, Tea Party people that have racial resentments, that have just been propagandized by, you know, the Chamber of Commerce-sponsored crap that you see on Fox News, they will support that. These bumpkins will believe that lowering the minimum wage is somehow going to be good for everybody. It's going to be good for this economy because it's going to give more money to business. So having American workers work for $2 or $3 legally in this country is going to somehow benefit everybody. And that's where we're going, okay? And it's I'm telling you, these things that we're seeing right now, Supreme Court decisions, the attack on workers' rights, the ridiculous tax policies that benefit corporations and allow them to pay next to nothing in taxes, while you and I have to fork over our tax money before we even get paid. These policies, these fascist policies, are going to have an effect on this country for decades to come, and it's going to take decades to undo the damage. Just my opinion. You know, it's going to take decades. I mean, look at the civil rights ruling. You think that Congress is going to deal with it? No. They don't care. You know, so you know, you're going to have a 2014 midterm election, which is going to be competitive. You have gerrymandered districts that allow these fascist Republicans to essentially move further and further to the right. You have wealth and income more consolidated now than they've been in 80 years. Corporate profits running amok. The wealthy getting more and more apathetic and more powerful in our society. You think that we're going to be able to change these laws now? You think we're going to be able to make Congress more productive? I mean, it's really disgusting. It really is. But I've been saying this now for, you know, 5 years, and I'm going to say it for as long as I possibly can, that we are moving towards a fascist country where workers are basically, you know, given a more difficult environment than they are now, where we have an obsession with national security, beefing up our defense industry. We're already seeing this now. We have a complete devotion to the corporate state. And, you know, you're not going to get this type of analysis on corporate-driven media for obvious reasons, because the media is one giant big business. You know, the media makes money off of everything I'm talking about, the erosion of workers' rights, the offshoring of jobs, the, you know, tax policies that allow corporations to pay next to nothing in taxes, the huge defense spending, the militarization of our police, okay, the surveillance state. All of these different things interlock to make this country more and more regressive. Now, I want to switch topics here. And I want to talk about the George Zimmerman case, because this is just absolutely fascinating. It really is. And I think it's a illustration of where we are in terms of race relations in America. I will say this, though, that, you know, I'm very sympathetic to Trayvon Martin. I'm very sympathetic to his parents, because there's plenty of evidence to exist in this case that George Zimmerman was racially motivated. There's plenty of evidence, I believe, that exists that shows that the Zimmerman family, the father in particular, has problems with black people, has, you know, issues regarding race, and certainly George Zimmerman does as well. And it's unfortunate that a young black individual lost his life, and some of the police treatment in this case, I think, has been just outrageous. I really do. It took a month for George Zimmerman to be charged. George Zimmerman was never given a drug test. Trayvon Martin was. George Zimmerman was chauffeured back to the scene where this has happened. Now, how many black defendants do you see chauffeured? Do you see, you know, escorted to the scene by the police department to give a recreation of events? I mean, you know, the system failed here, okay? Trayvon Martin didn't receive any justice, even regardless of whether or not George Zimmerman gets convicted, because the police proceedings have been just absolutely terrible. And, you know, within each one of these practices illustrates a you know, implication that Trayvon Martin's life is just not important. It isn't. I mean, if there wasn't an uprising, if there wasn't you know, political heat, George Zimmerman probably would have never been tried. And, you know, having said that, what looks like is going to happen is that Zimmerman's probably going to get off because the prosecution chose to charge George Zimmerman with second-degree murder, and second-degree murder, you know, the facts presented in this case do not point to second-degree murder. You know, if I were prosecuting the case, I would try to go to some lesser charge of manslaughter, because I think that certainly you can make an argument that George Zimmerman is guilty of manslaughter, more so, I believe, than you can of second-degree murder. But, you know, this is one of these things that race, the media is not driving the race meme here. I mean, you know, there have been some that suggest, oh, the media has a storyline that is convicted George Zimmerman, has assigned him to be a racist and you know, whatever. But the thing is that Zimmerman or Trayvon Martin, from what I've seen, you know, Trayvon Martin has really been lambasted in the press. This is, you know, you recall there was a doctor photo of Trayvon Martin depicting him as some sort of a gangbanger. He's been depicted as some sort of a menace because he's had a suspension from school. And yet, to my knowledge, and correct me if I'm wrong, George Zimmerman was arrested before. George Zimmerman was arrested, I believe, in 2005 on suspicion of spousal abuse. I'm going to try to look that up now. But, you know, Zimmerman has a history. And you look at, you know, some of his coworkers that knew Zimmerman and talked about how he bullied them and talked about how he would use, you know, almost racist language towards Middle Eastern coworkers. And all of this gets whitewashed. And I got to tell you, another thing that really, really pissed me off, and this, again, shows you the stereotyping of black Americans in this country, where you had Rachel Gentile, who was George Zimmerman's friend and who was on the phone, I'm not George Zimmerman, Trayvon Martin's friend, and who was on the phone with Trayvon Martin when he died, okay? And she noted that George, or that Trayvon Martin, you know, he noted that Zimmerman was following him and you know, he was concerned and whatnot. And how did the media react to Rachel Gentile? This is a lady who, I believe, spoke three languages, okay, or speaks three languages. How did they react to him, to her? Or, you know, they criticize her. They insult her. They say that she's uneducated. She's this. She's that. And this is the same thing that happened with the man that rescued the three kidnapped girls in Ohio. All right, you recall in May, three girls, Amanda Berry, Gina DeJesus, and another girl, I forget her name, they were found in a house, and they were, you know, kidnapped. Amanda Berry was missing for 10 years. And a African-American neighbor actually saw Amanda Berry, a note of the police department. Police came, rescued the girls, and he was lambasted in the media, the same way Rachel Gentile was for his words and his diction and you know, it's this stereotyping of black America that exists, and it's being really propagated by those that have racial resentments, those that, as I mentioned earlier, are, you know, maybe drift towards Tea Party ideology and drift towards, you know, Fox News and right-wing media outlets out there. And, you know, this is substantiated by the fact that, you know, when George Zimmerman, I believe George Zimmerman's first interview was with Sean Hannity. Now, look up Hannity's history when it comes to race in America. Look at some of the comments that he's made, some of his affiliations, you know, with Hal Turner, a confirmed white supremacist, or Andy Martin, another confirmed white supremacist. His sympathy for those that use the N-word and are ridiculed in the press, like, you know, people like Mark Furman, people like Dog Chapman, and others. He has a sympathy for those people that are described by many as racist. And, you know, this is what Fox News does. This is what they preach on their network. And that's why someone like George Zimmerman, or even George Zimmerman's father, would feel comfortable going on a network like Fox News, because, you know, many of the hosts share their perception when it comes to black people. And, you know, I think that that's what we have in this case, and that's what drives these contentious racial issues in America. And that's why race is still very much a factor. You know, I commented about this last week, where you'll have gays that are eventually going to be able to marry in every state, and that's great and all, but African Americans are not going to be able to vote in every state. We're seeing a rolling back of the Civil Rights Act. We've already seen it. It's basically done. It's basically gone. All right? And, you know, this is just unbelievable. It really is. And the one thing that gives me solace is the fact that we have changing demographics in America. Okay? We have Hispanics that are becoming an increasing part of the electorate out there. We have African Americans that, you know, are voting in record numbers. We have a deterioration of the white race out there, and this has limited, or this will limit, the power that the fascists have on us, presumably. Let's go to Justin Ray Harvey. He joins us. Justin, how are you, man?
I'm doing good, Bob. How's it going, brother?
Good. Did you just call in?
I decided to test out Skype to see how it does with the show. How's it doing so far?
You sound great, man. You sound very, very clear, and I hope the audience can hear me as well.
I'm sure they can, Bob, because I can hear you. I'm hoping that I'm not crashing your show here, but I was dying to try out the Skype feature to see if it's doing any better. So
I don't think so. I think we're really doing fine here. Now, you've been listening to me for a couple minutes now. Do you have any thoughts on what I was saying?
I just now turned it on, Bob, so if you could catch me up, that would be great.
Well, we're just talking about the George Zimmerman trial, talking about race relations in America and how race relations play into the George Zimmerman trial and the coverage. And you know, I mean, I talked about sympathetic media figures and sympathetic media outlets. And again, if you look at Fox News, it's no surprise that a majority of Fox News viewers, particularly in their primetime programming, are white. Now, you look at the Tea Party rallies, a majority, almost all Tea Party members are white. Look at the Republican Party. I think the Republican Party has very few minorities in it, very few women, where the Democratic Party is much more diverse. So there's something about what the Democrats are doing, their messaging, that is appealing to more minorities and a more diverse, you know, portion of America. And that's what, you know, we touched upon this last week on last week's show, that we still have race problems in America, and I don't think that's going to go away anytime soon for a variety of reasons, and that's really being played out in the George Zimmerman trial.
Well, honestly, Bob, when you talk about it going away, like you said, I don't think it's going to go away anytime soon. I think when it does go away, me and you will not be living in this world if and when it goes away.
Uh-oh, you're starting to break up now.
Shoot, can you hear me now?
Yeah, you're breaking up. It sounds pretty bad. I don't know what it is. It started off good, but then as you started talking, it's definitely breaking up.
Shoot, and my phone is dead.
Well, now it sounds better, but I don't know what happened. I think as you talk, it's probably going to maybe wear out the signal or something, and it's going to break up.
Yeah, but what I was saying, Bob, is if it ever ends with the racism thing, it won't be in our time. We'll probably be dead by the time this issue is resolved.
Yeah, and this is one of the things that I've talked about a lot, is that the use of the N-word is not tolerated among any public figure. You know, you will lose your job if you use that N-word. And I agree with that notion, because I don't think that somebody can use that word. And that word is probably the worst word in human history, because it describes African Americans when they were 3/5 of a person. And it's used to basically call an entire race subhuman, and it's just that it's absolutely wrong. And so if people use that word, then they're going to be retaliated against in terms of sponsors not wanting to be associated with racist individuals. And I think that's absolutely I think that's a good thing. But having said that, it really, in many ways, we've gone backwards here, and in terms of race relations, and it doesn't look like it's going to get better anytime soon. And I would argue that it's not about racism; it's about classism. It's about racism is used to separate the classes, and to basically, look, that minority is taking your job. I mean, I remember Jesse Helms. I don't know what year this came out, but I think it was in the 80s, where Jesse Helms, the former senator from North Carolina, I believe it was, and really just an outright racist guy. He died a couple of years ago, and he was a guy that sung Dixie to an African-American woman in an elevator, just has a history of racism. He aired a campaign ad that showed a whole bunch of hands accepting job applications, and then one hand tore up the job application because I'm just going off memory here. But what happened, the gist of the ad was that minorities are taking your job, and affirmative action are taking, people are taking your job, and it's, by minorities' fault that you don't have a job. And I submit to you that this thought is still alive and well in America, that we associate, economic problems with minorities in this country. In fact, I would argue that this is one of the main tenets of Republican thought in America, where going back to Ronald Reagan with his famous welfare queen myth, the belief that Mexicans and black people are taking our jobs, they're on government dependent, they're on government programs, and all these different things. It's a part of classism, and it's used by those to maintain economic supremacy.
Mm-hmm. And like this, Bob, you can call me whatever you want, just don't call me a Republican.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, you missed it. In the first part of the show, we were talking about how the Republican-controlled House, they've done nothing for the American people. I mean, they literally have passed no pieces of legislation to help with jobs. They've done nothing to help with student loans. They've done nothing to help with the debt ceiling where the government has to pay its bills. And still, even though the Republican Party has done nothing, okay, they've kicked workers down the road. They want to privatize essential government programs. They want to maintain corporate welfare. They want to do everything they can to hurt the vast majority of Americans. Even though that's the case, they still can potentially win elections. They could still have half of the country vote for them. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm asking this question, what the hell is wrong with this country? How do we arrive at this point where we have a political party, an entire political party, that is adversarial to the plight of the vast majority of Americans, and we have another political party, Democrats, that are basically just as useless, but they could still win elections, and they could still, have control. It doesn't make any sense to me.
It doesn't mean, Bob. It's like wiping before you poop, brother. It just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, you're breaking up again, unfortunately. But I made out, I think, the last thing you said. Yeah, it doesn't look like Skype is working for Blog Talk, you know?
Man, this sucks, because my phone is dead.
Yeah, it's you're breaking up really bad now. I don't know, though. But, you know, let's take a commercial break. Let's come right back here on Carson's Corner on Blog Talk Radio. You're listening to Carson's Corner with Bob Carson and Jay Rue. We'll be right back after this brief timeout.
Get over here!
Hi, this is Frank Schaefer, author of Sex, Mom, and God. You're listening to Carson's Corner, a show I enjoy. I hope you enjoy it, too. I encourage you to listen.
We're back here in Carson's Corner. My name is Bob Carson. Unfortunately, we lost J-Ray. There was some sort of problem with the connection, and every time, for some reason, we try to connect on Skype, when he calls in or somebody else calls in on Skype, usually there is a problem with the connection, and then I hope that the audio came out very distorted, and I hope that that's not the case now. I hope that you can hear me loud and clear. I want to encourage you to friend me on Facebook at facebook.com/BobCarsonMMA. And I want to talk about the Affordable Health Care Act, because right now the individual mandate has been suspended until 2015, okay? And the individual mandate is the most controversial provision in the Affordable Care Act. The Affordable Care Act actually has some decent provisions in it that really, it's really amazing that we have to sign into law to prevent, you know, insurance company discrimination and rescission, because other countries rule this out by default. Other countries that have single-payer health care, government-run health care for all citizens, do not view health care as a you know, commodity, or your health as a commodity. They view it as a right. And I think it was Franklin Delano Roosevelt said that a necessitous man is not a free man. Well, you know, if you have somebody that is born with a health condition or develops a health condition, that person should be entitled to live their life regardless of whether or not they have the ability to pay for health insurance. It's one of the things that really disappoints me about this country. And the Affordable Care Act actually has some decent things about it. It increases subsidies to low-income individuals. The Medicaid expansion, which we're seeing now, even Republicans have accepted this. Many Republican governors like Jan Brewer and others are accepting this expansion because it's money from the federal government for a certain period of time, and then, you know, it goes from there. You have also the state exchanges that have been set up as a result of the Affordable Health Care Act, and that supposedly is going to increase competition for individuals out there, individuals that have been priced out of the health insurance market. Keep in mind that 90% of the healthcare market is highly consolidated. So really, you don't have a choice over what healthcare provider you can go to. Now, many states offer charity care and others, other type programs, but really, if you want healthcare, if you're in a certain area, you can't get, you know, certain types of, you don't really have access to a huge market when it comes to health insurance out there. And what's happening now is the Americans for Prosperity, and this is a Koch-funded group. This is essentially a fascist group, the Americans for Prosperity, that was created from a group called Citizens for a Sound Economy. That group split, and it was Americans for Prosperity and FreedomWorks, which was headed by Dick Armey, the radical right-wing congressman, and I believe he left the organization. And Justin joins us now. This should be better. Justin, you there?
Yeah, I'm on my phone now, Bob. Hopefully my phone will hold out.
Yeah.
So.
I wish we had longer because we only have 5 minutes. But what I was saying is that this group, the Americans for Prosperity, a fascist group that is against worker rights. They're working overtime to lower the pay of American workers. They're working overtime to privatize government services. They're in favor of forced or they're in favor of segregated schools. Robert Greenwald, in one of his documentaries, The Best Government Money Could Buy, I believe it's called, exposes how this Koch-funded group actually sponsored or endorsed a candidate that was for segregated schools in, I believe it was North Carolina. You know, just this is just a horrible, horrible group, unfortunately, that has a lot of power in our system. They're mm-hmm. running ads against this Affordable Care Act, and the way I look at it is they're using this as a business opportunity for them, because if they can hurt President Obama politically and make make this country just worse than it is and blame everything on President Obama, then they have a better chance of regaining the Senate in 2014 and getting their agenda enacted even more so. And so, that's where we're at right now. I wanted to give an update on the Affordable Care Act. Justin, I want to kind of switch topics here. You had a show that you did last week. Tell people how that went.
Oh, it went fantastic. I interviewed Peter Mahoney, the senior vice president of the company that makes the voice software Dragon Nexus Speaking and Dragon Dictation. And here in the near future, that will be played on Carson's Corner.
Yeah, absolutely. We should do that. We'll play it. We'll do a live show and we'll play that. It's a half hour long, I believe, and it should be entertaining. And for people can go to your website now and listen to it, right?
Absolutely. Go to just type in J Ray Radio, JAYRAY Radio. And be able to find it.
I got to tell you that our last show got it's approaching over 2,000 downloads right now, and we're just very excited about that, and we want to thank everybody out there for listening. And I want to encourage people to really interact with us and really become part of the show. And I want to encourage individuals to follow us. You can follow this show. Just click on the follow button. You could follow Justin's show, and you could friend Justin and I on Facebook. Although I have to ask you, what's your status with Facebook? I don't want to get into specifics here, but I know that you were considering actually shutting down your Facebook page for a little while.
Well, right now, Bob, I'm still active, but if you really want to get active with me, you can follow me on Twitter at Justin Ray Harvey, but you can also find me on Facebook at this time. But I will answer mail ASAP, but I won't be as active on Facebook.
So. Well, yeah, and you can follow me on Facebook as well as at facebook.com/BobCarson. I am active on Facebook. I'm probably more active on Facebook than I am on Twitter. But we have just over a minute remaining, and I kind of just want to wrap up the show. Justin, give people a place where they can listen to your radio show and follow you.
Okay. You can follow me on Twitter at Justin Ray Harvey, and also follow me on Facebook, same username, and blogtalkradio/JRayRadio. So check it out.
Absolutely.
I will be absent next week. So.
Yeah, tell people what you got going on there.
I'm going to be working at a camp for kids with disabilities. So I'm going to be helping them out all week long.
Yeah, and this is something that Justin does every year. And so, I'll remind people when I'm on the air next week about where you are. Just want to tell people you can follow me again at facebook.com/BobCarsonMMA. I encourage everybody to follow me here on Blog Talk, blogtalkradio.com/Carson's Corner. And you can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/BobCarsonMMA. Until next time, ladies and gentlemen, show some respect. Bye-bye.